Yes, hey everybody, what's happening? This is the case on the blog network, on the internet radio network, Blog Talk Radio, where you can do your own radio shows. Y'all know what time it is. I am, this is K Thompson Live Show. I am the person that's usually known as the son and one of the co-hosts, Citizen Payne, Eric Payne, and all that. You are a lady.
Yes, I'm K Thompson. It's my show and your show. And excuse me. And people who are listening, they're going to be, you know, they're going to be really very concerned about, you know, what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking to Byron Saunders and also Wayne Gilbin. And we want to welcome everybody to the show. And it's a serious thing. The reason why we're starting off very serious is because of the fact that everybody knows about what's happening, you know, in the White House, with the person in the White House. And it's really upsetting, and it's annoying, and it keeps us really on our toes about so many different things that shouldn't be in the White House, mainly Donald Trump.
All right. You said a mouthful, Ma. That's a good way to put it. So many things concerned about the White House, and so many things, and yet another thing is day by day, hour by hour, minute by minute with this guy. Let me bring in our resident guests. Co-host Mr. Byron Saunders. Let me. Hey Byron, how you doing? We're having a little slowness with this computer here, but how you doing, Byron?
I continue to be blessed and highly favored and illuminated, and in some aspects, you know, as concerned as you and your mom have shared with us, you and Kay, the thing that's really engaging is that for the first time, and I can't remember. We are having a national discussion about race on a level that has been long overdue.
Yeah, that's a very good observation. You would think that discussion, it was started a little bit with the first African-American president, and ironically,
yes.
In a much more peaceful way. I mean, they were rowdy and rambunctious, but a little bit more, a much more peaceful way, at least what we're able to know about it. The whole crazy thing, about it is that it's brought on by the man. I was going to say a little bit more peaceful when I kind of lost my train of thought, but I just got it back because it reminds me of the beginning of the Obama presidency with the Tea Party, you know, and it makes me think back to when a lot of them went to Capitol Hill to protest. If you've been in D.C., and as you probably, you know, Byron, being a resident, someone born in D.C., anytime somebody goes by the White House, and this is the more I go down there nowadays, I notice people are always down to vacationing. It is our nation's capital. There are various groups down there protesting for their issues. People are going to visit their representatives and things like that, lobbying for various countries. And so you have protesters down there, too, to make their wishes known, you know, when a certain decision at the Supreme Court, abortion versus anti-abortion case, things like that, people from both sides will be there, as were the immigration issues and things like that. And so the Tea Party, if you remember a few years ago, around the beginning of the Obama administration, they decided to march on and go down there and give the representatives a piece of their mind. And if you remember how kind of in your face they were, very just kind of a few steps down from the Klan neo-Nazi rally the other day, kind of insightful, trying to be insightful. And if you remember, a couple of congresspeople that they allegedly spit on. I know one personally who serves with my cousin. So this is the kind of in-your-face, I'm sorry, everybody, we've got a little crazy things going on with the computer. This is the kind of in-your-face politics that they like to do. They like to be challenging and act like they're tough and nobody else is, and nobody else is prepared to be as aggressive as they are. You know, part of taking the high road and keeping it high is that you don't drop down to their level, even though sometimes – you know, there's those of us that are more than willing, or at least can more than willing handle and protect ourselves and defend ourselves when met by aggression with those that seek to really basically take our lives. Because there is individuals that march now, neo-Nazi white supremacists and the white pride and all right. Some of them have the intention They're just mad because black people are living, right? If their interest is in protesting because they feel their issues aren't being met, that's one thing. But some of them, obviously, they want to take it back to the Klan days and all that, where they think that they'll terrorize people of other races and subjugate people and reign supreme. This guy, Richard Spencer, who I saw on this documentary that Charles Barkley did, I saw one clip where he kept talking about we want to put the white race back into the position to dominate, you know. And Barkley or the guy that was with him, unfortunately, didn't challenge him on dominate, or maybe the guy that was with Barkley did. But this is where their perspective is, you know. I mean, I'm sure that a lot of people would agree that, you know, people have the right to believe what they want to believe. But when they get to the point where they want to put certain things in action, where they want to put black people in their place, where they want to go around and start beating up black people, beating up gay people, beating up Jewish people, beating up all people that they don't like or they feel shouldn't be in this country when they stole it in the first place, yeah, that's when you have to draw the line. That's when you have to say, well, we have nothing better. I have no choice but to defend myself because you want me dead. And if that is the final solution for them, I think they're going to find out that that's probably not going to be easily attainable because there are those of us now that, you know, we got to defend ourselves. We got to defend our right to life and liberty and to be able to just live in the world. So that's probably not going to happen. Everything south of that probably would be open to some sort of discussion and intellectual debate, obviously. When you start talking to these people a certain way, I saw one interview with a guy said, I work with black people. I'm all around black people in the community. You know, it's just that I want me as a white guy, I don't want my pride. And oh, that's understandable. That's an understandable notion. But then they go a little further because they can't really intellectualize their. So then he said, because they're lying. They're telling a lie. Okay, nobody asked you about the lies. Just people just ask you to make your point, why you feel as a white man that you somehow your rights are being recognized and all that. And if you get deep enough into the discussion and deep enough into asking them what they mean, a lot of them, they get, you know, like that person who doesn't really have the mental capacity to debate with you, and they get frustrated, and then they just want to start getting physical with you because they realize they have no point, and their point is based on emotion and some myth in America that really didn't exist and no longer exists. Let's bring Wayne Gilman into the discussion as well. Hey, Wayne, how you doing?
Hey, good evening, Eric. Good evening, Byron, everyone. Kay, I have to commend to your attention that everything that you're saying is so succinct, precise, and on point, man. You know, it's just it's unfathomable that we're living in times like this when, you know, the leader of the free world just doesn't seem to want to get it. There's an arrogance about him. There's been an arrogance about him for some time. But, you know, now the world is now well aware of the level of his arrogance and ignorance with the arrogance, you know?
Exactly.
It's just unfathomable that someone of his capacity with his wealth could just not see things And other than through his particular prism, which he considers to be balance. You know, we here in the New York area are familiar with Donald Trump and his activities.
Oh, yeah.
We go back to the Central Park crisis. You know, Kay, you're well aware of many of the ads that he used to take out that would, you know, the definitely skewed a certain way. But, you know, to me, what he has done is that he is basically exposed himself to a point where, you know, there's no turning back. There's no justification for anything that he's saying, you know, and unfortunately, he doesn't even care that it's putting the administration and the country at risk. You know, he sets up organizations to improve the economy, and everybody's bailing out on him, you know. And this is not just a black-white thing now. You know, when you see these Nazis on TV protesting, they're talking about Jews, too. And this is how the NAACP, years ago, forged an alliance because Jews and blacks were going through the same thing over and over again. The only difference is that Jews had been able to assimilate and blend in with the society where we stand out. But the problems are still the same. They're no different than we are
remember,
when it comes to
we remember,
discrimination. I'm sorry, yeah. Kay.
Yeah. We remember Wayne when he started, what we first, when I first heard of Donald Trump, it was for the case of the Central Park Five. Okay?
Right.
He accused them, because I was on the air at that time that story broke, you know. He accused five black young men, in the case of what, the Central Park Five, of raping, you know, this jogger, right?
Right.
And that was the biggest, case, and he became known to us there at WLIBBLS at that particular time.
Right.
You remember that?
Right. To give the context,
yeah.
Now, I was going to say, you guys give a little context, Wayne, and my mom started touched on it. Why don't you give the context of the reason why? Now, these guys were accused because,
these gentlemen were falsely accused, and this is, and mind you, this was at a time when DNA was not something considered part of the process in which to investigate, to find out whether or not if there's any definitive correlation between the attack and the people who have been accused. And the thing that really was so nasty about this is that eventually word got out that somebody within the prison system, as memory serves, had admitted to the crime. And still, in spite of that, he had this agenda to malign these poor young black men and to make them and throw them under the bus regardless of what was being discovered. When it eventually came out, you know, after they had served a considerable amount of time in jail, he still wanted to come back and say they weren't worthy of any kind of compensation for falsely being accused. That says a lot about this man's personality. You know? And Kay, I remember the days of you and Bob Grant going back and forth on this on this issue.
Listen, I was on the air and we were locally, we had gone to Brooklyn for some odd reason. And what had happened was that the Central Park Five, they became known as, you know, in the paper, were in the park. They were running through the park, having fun through Central Park. And somehow this young lady was abused, was raped in the park, okay? And Donald Trump accused these five boys of that crime. And it was all in his paper. It was front page, big letters, unusually large letters in the newspaper. I remember it because I had the paper and I was on the air and I was the first person to get that story. Now, those boys went to jail under accusation that he was so used to, you know, accusing people of different things that they served how many years?
A considerable amount of time. Let's.
And what's happening with that story was that Anna Phillips, reporter, at that time, was working for, you know, the paper. And for
CBS.
For CBS at that particular time. And she knew that it was wrong because of the fact that they had told her, you know, then told Donald Trump that no, these boys didn't do it. But he persisted.
Right.
So I'm surprised about him being part of a Nazi group, you know, of an anti black group. He's always been anti black.
But Kay, as you used to say years ago, he would never disavow any connection that way. It's almost like, and this, that's the whole problem with him. Eric?
Let's just make a few points of order. They were accused of the crime. It wasn't Trump that accused them, but he was the one that helped in society.
No, he
didn't accuse them. They were already accused of the crime, and then Trump came out and took a big ad in the paper saying, bring back cops, bring back our justice system, jumping on the bandwagon of assuming and assuming they were guilty and before they were actually charged ahead of trial. And also, too, and the big thing that you were talking about, Wayne, and I think the headline that needs to be blared out is that these guys were innocent. There was a guy in the prison system that admitted to the crime. He was kind of ignored. The cop didn't want to do the work to really dig it up. They had made up their minds that these young men, young black and Hispanic men, were guilty, and they railroaded them into being convicted. So just so I get a couple of points of order. And Donald Trump jumped on the environment at the time, as did most people that think like he does, and said that these guys should get the harshest penalty and the harshest punishment available to them. And you're right, once they came out, he still had a negative thing, was not remorseful about the ad that he took out. Even though, and let's make this the big headline, the Central Park Five were innocent. Young guys were railroaded. Somebody else raped and beat up this woman, the Central Park jogger who was jogging at night. It was somebody else who did that. The kids were in the park as the kids had kind of being wild, you know, the term wilding. They kind of got negative connotations, positive connotations.
Exactly.
But they scooped these guys up like they do it many times and railroad. You want to say something?
Yes, I do. But the thing was, they knew, the policemen knew that the boys were innocent because of the fact that Anna Phillips was on that case.
Right.
She was the first one who broke that case. And also what was happening was that they picked these boys up because they're running through the park having fun. And they went to a big deal thing. They more or less demonized them, and they went to jail for how many years?
Over a decade. One thing, 5 years. One thing you said, Wayne, and I want to move on. You talked about Donald Trump. He's arrogant, and he doesn't realize. I think it's just the opposite. I think, and some of the people said that some of the staff said they were surprised that he said out loud in public what he had been saying in private. You know, I was one of the people who said I didn't think he was a racist, but apparently he is a racist. He harbors racist views, and also he's a person who's an opportunist. You know, he'll sell out whoever in order to save himself. So when he came out and said, you know, on both sides, you know, Saturday, where he kind of made something, and he called a lot of heck for it, so he kind of came out and condemned them, and then he went back on it and showed his true colors. So I think that that is the person that he is, and that he's not. It's not that he doesn't get it. It's just that's part of who he is. Arrogant, narcissistic, racist, all those things fall in line. What do you think, Byron?
Well, I agree with each and every one of you. And the thing that I find extremely extraordinary at this particular moment is that the conversation nationally is engaging from every level. Even his own GOP party are beginning to call him out. Carl Bernstein yesterday on CNN, Carl Bernstein, you all may remember, Watergate Pulitzer Prize winning writer from the Washington Post, engaged in a conversation sharing with the CNN audience that he had been hearing from recent days, not recent weeks, but in recent days on Capitol Hill from the GOP conversations about Trump's mental capacity, and ultimately saying that they were not quite ready to go public with their comments, but after yesterday, after the meltdown at his press conference this week, those conversations are now beginning to show up on the other talking head stations and beginning to say maybe it is time for us to engage the 25th Amendment of the Constitution with respect to removing a sitting president who is mentally challenged in terms of his policies, which are none. He has no policies. He's continuing to do the same things he's been doing for the last 6 months, writing executive orders, thinking those are policies, and not presenting to Congress its opportunity to create legislation. That's how it works. And when Rupert Murdoch and the Post and his talking heads on Fox TV, they're beginning to attack Trump as well. And you know that is his media outlet. If they're pushing him into a corner, it is necessary to know that they're Mueller. Imagine this. We went from a week ago from a confrontation with North Korea, nuclear possibilities, to putting that on the burner, to Mueller bringing down subpoenas for information to this particular incident that just happened. And I can tell you, here's the thing that we are going to begin to look at that's even more incredible. When you think about the Russian hack, and everybody's trying to say, well, you got to prove there was collusion. Well, the Russian hack engaged in a and the aspect of dealing with America's racial problems. And they began to sow those seeds in those 39 districts as part of voter suppression for which the GOP took up, and they were attacking racially. The GOP was using the racial ticket a long time, and we kept trying to push Hillary Clinton to engage the Central Park Five issue, and she never picked it up. But all along, if you look at every time the GOP engaged in a race-baiting situation, wouldn't it stand to reason that if the Russians understood our precarious relationship with race relations in this country, that that would be part of their hack? So now you
can see how that would
engage the collusion and connect the final dot. And Charlottesville, Virginia, on the campus of the University of Virginia, and imagine him bringing up George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, that's Trump, in a conversation. My God, he's suggesting that they had slaves too. This is a conversation of major proportions.
Well, that's a false equivalency of an idiot. That's a false equivalency of an idiot. It's like when people say black pride, they want to say white pride. Black lives matter, white lives matter. Like that's what idiots say. Without understanding the root cause of saying it. And, of course, you know, the Russians, you know, the GOP didn't need no help working on that race issue from the Russians, bro. You know as well as I do, but I understand what you're saying. And in correct kind of espionage, you're going to use all things that you know that those people are vulnerable to, right? So they're going to play on that.
That's right.
And some of those hacks and those emails they're going to send are going to play upon the GOP's penchant for racism. And I think it's pretty it's an okay assumption to assume that the Republicans are racist or prejudiced, and regardless of some that might not be and some that are coming out, the precursor, if you look at the tepid responses, the tepid tweets from Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell, the precursor in all this is that they laid the foundation was laid, right? The infringing upon voting rights, the voter IDs laws, those foundations were laid. And the only problem that the mass of the GOP party has, the Republican Party has with Donald Trump, is that he's putting their game, their age-old game out on Front Street, right? They've always been engaged in this. They've always been engaged for going back to Ronald Reagan, talking about welfare queens and some young buck, the language he was using. They've always been doing that ever since Johnson and the Civil Rights era when they moved for the Dixiecrats, the racist Democrats, and they joined the Republican Party. So they've been doing that for the last 50 years. It's just that their game plan got underground. Those guys you saw in Charlottesville the other night that were wearing the polo shirts, the white polo shirts, and the gray khakis, you know, those are the type of individuals that are racist now, because people talk about many of those that had no problem showing their face are students. They're police officers, they're professionals within the community. They're infiltrators in the community, walking around acting like they're cool with people. That's why I said, you know, what level are you guys talking about? Are you talking about when you go home from work at night, you just don't want to be around black people? Well, that's understandable. You shouldn't have to live around people you don't want to live around. You shouldn't have to think of ways you don't want to think. And if you're concerned about your heritage, that's a valid concern too. But when you start putting certain things into action, when you start taking certain actions against people because your preconceived notion about how things are going on, and you then be ready for the reactions. There's a young white guy who was on TV who got outed. You know, a couple of people are getting outed now on Facebook and
looking
at that route.
Yeah.
And they had the young white boy, you know, his picture at the rally was you know, he had a snarl on his face. He was yelling. But then they did a news story on him. He was saying, well, people are giving me death threats in my family, and I'm just expressing my views, and I think it's kind of barbaric that they're threatening our lives. Well, you're supporting an organization that threatens other people's lives. See, they had a problem. They went out there to protest what they thought was they were losing their rights and the white man losing their position in America. They had a protest. Now, people were there protesting their protests, right? So they got mad that the other protesters was protesting them, and what happened in the protest, when you get two protesters involved, you get a little friction. It's like oil and vinegar, if you know what I mean. So it's kind of funny, but you kind of feel what I'm saying, right? And there was a bunch of white kids out there that wasn't having it, having the racism. They were the ones that were trying to mix it up. Not too many black people were trying to mix it up, the few that were out there, because, you know, if we go out there, we're going to get heated. It's going to be problems anyway. Also, another point I want to make is they had the militia out there. If you look at some pictures with the press, hasn't been kind of been playing down, there were a lot of white militia out there that were in full, like they were on the battlefield. These guys had AKs, they had all firearms, walking around with guns, standing there waiting for something to jump off. And I'm wondering, maybe that's why the police didn't show up. Because maybe they were outgunned by these guys. Because if you watched...
Oh, yeah, that was mentioned, that they, you know, all of them were armed. They were packing, you know.
And the other thing is that the critical thing about that is, and thank you for bringing that up, is because now it engages the other fear factor, the other critical issue in our country that's right up there with race relations, and that's ownership of guns. This has to be placed under control. And when you have
right.
those people showing up with AK-47s
right.
and they're there to engage in intimidation, they are not,
right.
as the Second Amendment engages us and tells us, they are not authorized militias. We
right.
have a National Guard. We have police departments, but that's
right.
a violation of the Second Amendment in its clearness of its intent, and not about the right to carry weapons. But, I mean, let's face it, you're coming to this event as a intimidator. That's
right.
being a bully. That's a provocateur. And at that point,
exactly.
at the worst thing that could possibly happen, and because there are other planned racist, white supremacy protests coming up in the very near future, there's several that are happening this weekend. What I am most
right.
afraid of is that one opportunity, that's the perfect storm, in which there's their group engages in initiating a fire of their weapon, and then you have the police there with their weapons, and then the people in the middle are the ones who are going to be the critically wounded ones, not the police.
Hold on, let me talk about the police. Let's talk about the police, because
there
must be a reason why the Charlottesville police didn't show up a lot sooner, right? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Now, I put a pin
That's
on
exactly.
my, hold on, let's put a pin in it right now real quick. Anybody that wants to call and get in on this discussion that might be listening to us live, you can call at 323-679-0906. That's 323-679-0906. You want to make your express your thought or opinion. But the thing that I noticed is that, right, where were the cops during all this? Because normally, if it was just all black protests or black lives, cops would have been out in force, right, waiting for stuff to happen. But there were no cops there, A, for a very long time. B, and when I see those militia guys walking around, I'm wondering, well, maybe they were outgunned. C, or maybe the guys that were going to go to the rally had to work that day at the police force. That's what I put up on my post. Maybe how many of the cops that got an invitation to the neo-Nazi rally actually had to go to work that day? So meaning that they weren't going to be, you know, remember when Trump said, you know, when you get these criminals, you get these people, it's okay, cops, if you rough them up a little bit. And I saw footage of some of those guys standing in front of the cops with all their garb on, and the cops were moving down the stairs, and these guys were just not moving, and the cops were pushing them, gently pushing them out the way.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering how many, and this is what we need to really talk about, is a numbers thing, right? If 90% of that police force, and it's supposed to be a black police chief, black vice mayor, whatever, right? If 90% of the police force is white, 90% of the police force is white, then how many of that white percentage are sympathizers with the protesters? So that means, are they really going to enforce the law equally? Are they really? Maybe they refuse to show up. Maybe the police chief said, y'all get out there now, and half of them said, oh, hell no, I'm not going out there. I don't understand the reason.
And the other,
because they sure pulled
the
up that Bearcat after the dude,
right.
ran into everybody. If you notice, a little while after, they had one of those big armored vehicles that they seemed to dig up out of nowhere. Why didn't they dig it up when it was bedlam in the street? So these are things
and
we're
the
concerned
exactly.
about. How many of these people are insidiously embedded within the government? Trump just let them in. I mean, you know, Trump just made it known. I mean, he made it obvious that they're in the White House, but we know they've been in the White House all the time, all these years.
Yeah.
So,
and the other factoid that was
the next move.
Yeah, and the other factoid that is critical to acknowledge and really begin to recognize is that with the conversation about the protesters who were nonviolent had no permit. It has been revealed they had two permits, but then the mayor and the city of Charlottesville said, but they didn't really need a permit to engage in their protest at the site where the Robert E. Lee statue was located. So once again, the infringement of First Amendment rights. Because we don't need a permit if we want to go out there. You don't need a permit to come out and say, I'm against this. You have a First Amendment right, constitutional right. So what's being trampled on is the Constitution. And then what's really interesting and really I'm almost to the point of excitement about what's happening on Capitol Hill is that the Democrats and those who've been kind of, and, you know, sitting on the fence are now being emboldened to say, look, if you're not a racist, your policies that you're presenting are racially motivated. So let's deal with it. And Clyburn from North Carolina came on today and said, you know what? We can work in a bipartisan manner, but we got to come to the table to deal with infrastructure. We got to come to the table and deal with the issues of jobs and other issues that are not and fix Affordable Care Act. We can do that. But we've got to sit down together and we got to put aside party affiliations and come to the realization it has got to be about the citizens of we, the people of the United States. And I am encouraged to see this because we're tearing ourselves apart. And we've got to go somewhere.
But we are tearing ourselves apart. There's a certain segment of America that wants to bring America to the seat. I don't know if we are tearing ourselves apart. The temperature of the volatility is what stands to tear ourselves apart. But when people march on you and you want to resist their marching on you, that's called self-defense. That's called standing up for yourself. Primarily probably university students, didn't want to let that hate come onto their campus. Like you said, do they need a permit to stand up for themselves? Do they need a permit to reject them? We all know what happens in these protests, right? There's a certain amount of people that come out there to protest, anarchists and all that, that want to incite stuff on both sides.
Yes.
So who's enough? Yes. But certainly, if you're coming out with torches and if you're coming out with all these flak jackets and helmets and all that and sticks because you're anticipating the other side to do something and you're just waiting, and some of your activities, calling people's names to instigate them, then that might happen on both sides. And there might be a point. Somebody called your name, it's not necessary for you to call them a name back. It ain't necessary for you to grab that flag that guy's walking by.
Right.
You know? And
exactly.
And take it from the anger-tempered dude who it's not always necessary for you to be jumping on people if they didn't put your hands on. However, when you're trying to stand up for righteousness, some people, you know, they just get a little carried away with the moment. I'm sorry, Wayne, I just interrupted. You wanted to say, Mr. Gilman?
No, I happen to agree with both of what you're saying. I mean, the thing is that we're at a point now where he has sufficiently polarized this country that race has become the pivotal issue once again. It's always been lurking in the background. But the bottom line is that where do we move forward from this? You know, will this be enough to galvanize those progressive forces to have this man outed? I mean, this country cannot continue. It's been demonstrated for a number of years now that racism affects the economy of the United States. You know?
True.
So, I mean, even with all that he's trying to do to improve the standard of living of those people who feel that they were somewhat disenfranchised, and I'm talking about his core down there in West Virginia, in the Midwest, and all those places where they feel that they hadn't gotten a fair shake because of the previous administrations, you know, stirring up this mud about the differences between the two societies is not helping their cause at all. And that's the issue, you know? And the arrogance, again, I go back to this thing that there is something wrong with this man. There's a pathology there. Yes. That just needs to be, as Byron said, that needs to be exposed and brought to a head. You know, there's no reason why this man, they should be. I know there's been an agenda to have him impeached. Well, it's not moving fast enough. I mean, we were at the precipice of nuclear war just a couple of days ago. and look where we're at now. Because
that's exactly
of Charlottesville.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
I mean, it's
now,
frightening. It's extremely frightening.
It is extremely frightening. As you said, he's very dangerous. And the conversation about the 25th Amendment will engage a bipartisan understanding to at least acknowledge there's something wrong with this president who is not acting, as they say on both sides, presidential. Something is critically wrong when we cannot get a recommendation from the Oval Office on legislation. We get nothing but executive orders. We get nothing but verbal pronouncements. There are no policies. And that's what's wrong. We don't have anything to vote on. So at some point, he needs to go back and look at, you know, the basic elements of you know, what was that, the ROC program where, you know, you got a bill that's on the Hill and it goes up the Hill and goes to the Congress, back over to the Senate. I mean, he hasn't done any of that. And that's basic,
ain't doing none of
that's
that,
basic
right.
civics 101.
He doesn't know nothing about that. He thinks he's the boss. He doesn't understand that the three branches of government are co-equal branches of government. First, and let me say also, too, you know, you talk to Wayne, you know, that arrogance is a part of his problem. Because when Ken Frazier, you know, CEO of Merck, the only brother on that council, I always wondered who the brother was sitting next to him when he had these economic things, like before they talked about him, that's Kenneth Frazier, CEO of Merck, when he had a good conscience, resigned from it, Trump automatically went in on him, started dissing him, right? Not realizing the circumstance, not realizing the current temperature of the country.
Yeah.
Here's the only black member, excuse me, as far as I know, on that council who, out of his conscience, obviously decides to resign based on the president's remarks. This man does not have the wherewithal, going back to what you said, Wayne, doesn't have the wherewithal to understand, I understand why he might need to resign because of certain. He just goes in on them like it's just another day at the job, right? Like this is just somebody else that's coming against me. And also, too, now you have the avalanche because now he disbanded those manufacturing councils because you had an avalanche of other ones leaving. And that's really when it starts to hurt you, when the business leaders turn on you, right? When the business leaders don't do business with you no more, Trump, when you're costing them money. Because let me break it down to a hood perspective, right? When the block boys are on the block, right, on their block where they're doing business, and somebody's bringing heat on the block, doing crazy stuff, causing the cops to come around in 5 minutes, what do the block boys do? They shut that down because you're bringing too much heat, i.e. you're messing with my money. So let's elevate the conversation, if you call it a need to elevate. Because when you start messing with these CEOs and these Fortune 500 companies, these billion-dollar companies' money, man, they lost tolerance with you. And they don't. And that's what Donald Trump is on the brink of doing. The racism, the collusion,
and,
all
yes.
of that. But once you start
and what's really
with
interesting
money,
is that the strategy now really engages – pushing him and his administration and all those who are standing with him into a no-exit corner so that the options become very clear. You will either resign in honor or stand your ground, and we will proceed to push more of the subpoenas, the potential for indictments, because that's next what's coming. And I heard a congressman on the news today say there is no agenda that we're going to engage in policy on Capitol Hill until we resolve this. This is not going to go away. And that means debt ceiling. That means the which is coming up in September. The debt ceiling is the first thing that's going to hit us, because if they shut down the government, you can best believe that all hell will break loose even further. But here's something else, Kay and Wayne and Eric, that really is, I find, more about the encouragement of the value of our executive, judicial, and congressional. The strategy of the three forces. Neither one has one power over the other. And that ultimately, what could and indeed really be the saving grace for America, because right now we're at a defining moment of our nation. This is it.
Yeah.
This becomes the moment that we've been, you know, you sort of pray for this opportunity, but it's like it's gone beyond just race discussion now, because I'm glad we are engaging it because it's been long overdue. But now we're talking about defining the relationship that we have to each of those branches and their responsibilities to the American people, not to the the PACs, not to the lobbyists, but to the American people. And we're going to really, now we're peeling back the layers of why government is a critical need over states' rights. And you remember, mm-hmm. that whole states' rights issue is more about the Civil War. You talk to a Southerner who's going to claim their heritage about in a statue, and they're going to tell you front up, it's never been about slavery. It's always been about states' rights. But what we have discovered is what Trump and his administration and Bannon called it. He said at the beginning when they were naming all these secretaries who have no concept or idea how to run a federal agency, that
right.
their function was there to help render the federal government completely and totally dysfunctional. Because if they could do that, then they could engage in states' rights issues and say, well, the states have to take over. So we're going to push it back up to Congress, where we know we got a Republican-controlled Senate and a Congress, and they will take over because the states will be in our favor. It doesn't work like that, folks. It works in conjunction with each other. And now mm-hmm. we can push back and really understand the strategy for which they wanted to use. It is indeed, they were trying to establish what a third world nation would be called a coup d'etat. And they were engaging in it on so many levels. But now it's being exposed on so many levels. The layers have been peeled back, and now the exposing of, and you're turning the light on all of those dark elements and the constant forcing us to go into fascism. It's not going down like that. And in this moment,
right.
folks, think about it. It wasn't us.
Well, that's what we've been saying about the silent coup. That's what we've been saying about the silent
right.
coup. That's what I've been saying about the silent coup.
Also, exactly.
You know, Bannon, like you're right, that was Bannon's goal. It was he wanted to get rid of the administrative state. I think that was the phrase
yes.
he used.
So, yes.
yeah, but the way that comes back to bite them is, like you said, there's co-equal branches of the government. The only thing when you mentioned about putting the layers being pulled back is that, like they said, pull the covers back or off all these guys have been to pull the sheets off, so to speak, which is
yeah,
an
oh,
apropos
yeah.
pun. Pull the sheets
apropos.
Off of all these guys that have been hiding behind their clans. We know Jeff Sessions is a Klansman, even though he claims
yes.
he's not. He's probably been to a Klan
yeah.
rally or two in his lifetime, right? So to have
yeah.
him jump. Talk about he's going to investigate the rights and be not even, it's just his dialect that makes me uncomfortable, I'll be honest with you, you know,
yeah.
so to have him talk about it and have all these other, McConnell and all these guys, like I said, Trump is putting their game plan out on Front Street, the game
mm-hmm.
plan that they've had that people have not known that they've kept under cover, that main, pardon this pun again, their Trump card to act like, you know, people are voting illegally and this and that, and to try
yes.
to manufacture a narrative about black people. I just saw on the internet the other day somebody put a post up about the welfare queens. Yes, they had a little video of a person of color, a woman of color, talking about why she grew up working, she could lay back and have babies and this and that. So they're rehashing that argument. You know, they're trying to rehash
yes.
these old arguments. You know, I kind of was feeling nostalgic when Obama got elected, when people were talking about we live in a post-racial country, because it got me to thinking like, well, wow, what are black people going to be striving for? What's going to be our obstacle? What's going to be in our way? You know, if we get to this place of understanding and love and all the races are going to come together. And I personally would like to thank President Trump, because I thought my life had ended. I thought I had no goals anymore to constantly try to overcome the racism in this country. So I would like to thank him for giving me something to live for again.
Hello, come
on. Because the struggle does continue. You know, if you're used to struggling so long and you ain't got to struggle no more, you're like, well, what's life all about? Then what are we going to live for? So I was no worried. But here comes
it's just sad. I mean, I know this is, there's humor in what you're saying, but I mean, it's just really sad. It's despicable. every time I think about, you know, what goes on and what's at stake, you know, and you know, the thing is, I've lived long enough to see, and Byron, and I'm certain your mom Kay can attest to all this, you know, to see the epitome of racial degradation in this country at its very worst during the 60s, you know. I was a young man, you know, with the Jim Crow situation, going to Washington, D.C. with my parents, you know. And to me, that was like going to Central Park. It wasn't that that far away, and you would never think something like this was still going on back then, you know.
Exactly.
I used to watch my father complain that he couldn't walk down 125th Street with his white daddy because he married a black woman and out of the country. I mean, all sorts of things that go, everything goes back to freaking race here. And I just think that's the thing that just, I just find so, you know, despicable that, you know, after all these years, it took somebody with just such a myopic mind, with just such a small agenda, and someone who's got wealth and was able to manipulate the media in such a way that he was able to gain the highest office of the land and have us in this freaking turmoil. You know, that's what bothers me, you know?
Well, Wayne, if I could just say, so I think it's the liberals. They talk about liberal racism, right? You got to watch the liberals. I was listening to Malcolm X talk about, you know, some of these so-called liberals could kind of be just as bad an enemy. And I don't know about that, but what I do know is that a lot of people that were supporting Bernie Sanders that got mad that he didn't get the nomination and how he was treated, and I agree there was some suspect stuff how he was treated. But a lot of those liberals who happened to be white were able, some, I don't know if they all did, but a lot of them were able not to vote. I mean, they had the choice of not going to the polls that day. So, well, I'm just not going to vote tonight. And they could live out and ride out the next 4 years because it doesn't affect their people directly. However, black people, I'll say it again, when the United States catches a cold, black people catch pneumonia. Those of us that are at that segment of society that is dependent on whatever the government does, whether you're dependent on your checks, your disability, unemployment, Social Security checks, any ripple in the government where people depend on the machinations and the workings of the government for their livelihood, those are the people that are most affected, right? So, and unfortunately, absolutely, a lot of those people happen to be people of color. So when these people decide they ain't going to vote this time, I even saw a few black people that said they weren't going to vote, which infuriates me because I know a lot of people died for that vote. But when these other folks who are part of the dominant society, who look like members of the dominant society, decide not to vote because they just mad, that you're not really helping the cause. You're allowing the opportunity, the situation, and nobody really expected the madness that Donald Trump was talking was going to get him in, and maybe that's why they felt comfortable enough not to go to the polls that day. But look where we are now, right?
I understand what you're saying. But, you know, I tell you, Eric, not to cut you off, but I think the thing that really bothers me is that I used to hear some black folks, especially the ones that I would come across, you know, getting their election day, and they would say, you know, well, Obama tried 8 years to work with the Congress, and it wasn't working. And that maybe if we have this white guy in there, you know, he's Republican, and the Republicans would probably understand him better. You know, he seems like he has his heart in the right place because he's talking about jobs, this, that, and the other. The things that Obama could not accomplish as a black man, you know, maybe this guy could do it for us. But at the end of the day, I just firmly believe that's just a sea of ignorance. No one understands why.
Are you saying that was their thought process? Are you saying
I'm talking about some blacks who just chose not to vote or give Donald Trump a chance. I mean, this man, he's the epitome of hubris. You know, he is so arrogant. He is like foolish pride, foolish pride. And his judgment is so clouded. And the thing is, we as New Yorkers, particularly those who have followed them over the years, you know, like your mother and I, we would know. I mean, we couldn't beat a drum loud enough to to get that point across. And again, this is where media, black media, has been at a failing, because the thing is, we no longer have the resources that we once had to have that message cross country the way we used to beat it. My opinion. That's a whole other show by itself.
Well, because here's the salient point that we can all agree on, because what you just outlined there, and thank you for saying what you just said, Wayne, because planting the seed of doubt, okay? Can we agree that the Russian hack worked? Can we agree based on those, just what you just said alone? Because when you look at the 39 states they targeted, that 1% ended up being 39%.
Exactly.
Think about that. Think about that.
I never looked at it that way, but that's true.
Everybody's keep looking for the collusion and the points and looking in all the wrong places. I'm telling you, it's so clear. Because an economist will tell you, statistically, the anomaly that was just created out of this past election was an impossibility.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But
okay, it's as plain and simple as that. All right. Now, here's the thing, I read this quote the other day. I gotta pass this on to y'all because this is so critical, and this explains everything about what we should be doing. It's like, here we are trying to figure this all out, but it comes down to one simple axiom in life. Our prime purpose in life is to help people. And if we can't do that, at the very least, don't hurt them.
Hey, wow.
Here.
Yeah.
See?
Wow, deep.
That's deep and profound.
Is that Nelson Mandela? I mean, who are you quoting there?
I'm quoting from the movie, and this is where it gets real interesting. That's in the movie Almost Christmas, a comedy.
You got to look at the movie
because it's stated so plainly about a homeless shelter. That was the homeless shelter's M.O., I'm like, come on, people. It comes back to such a simple thing. Wow.
Yeah, but unfortunately we're not living in a world like that where a lot of people have come to that understanding, that almost spiritual kind of aspect of things. I mean, real briefly.
It's like a self-destruction.
Right. Real briefly, I was talking to a friend of mine who was a black elected official who's parents, people are Republicans, and these people are very religious, you know. And they were trying to explain to me why some of the black people, even though they probably voted Democrat while they're registered Republican, they were registered because of the abortion issue and the gay issue.
Yeah.
If you're a Republican, you're kind of enabling the whole mentality of the Republican Party, which seeks to suppress the votes of minorities, which is one of their platforms, right? One of their points.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I find interesting about a lot of these blacks who are very religious and they want to support, you know, you get these fake pastors who want to support Trump based on some of those issues. It's like, okay, you willing to stand up against gays and people having abortion, but you're not willing to take a stand against this man who's promoting violence against your own people. Hiding behind that kind of whole religious thing and using that where you're applying that yardstick over to some of the principles of the man, but not equally applying it to all, is really kind of ludicrous perspective as to why you want to support Donald Trump, which is really kind of crazy.
And the real factor, here's the other factor that I find extraordinary. He had no government experiences, 6 bankruptcies, 5 kids from 3 different marriages, 11 charges of sexual assault, and over 4,000 lawsuits. And you put this man in charge of your nation?
That's right, a real paragon of virtue there.
If he wasn't a white millionaire, they would be calling him a ghetto, no good, deadbeat dad.
Thank you.
We got a couple of people calling on the line real quick, last couple of minutes. I'm going to go to this 908 number first, see if you want to say something. I'm opening your mic. person. There you go. Do you want to say something at the 908 number?
Hey.
Area codes?
Good evening. I'm here at the 11th hour as usual. Hey, Kay, this is Kiyoshi. Been trying to catch up to you.
Okay, Kiyoshi, really, really briefly, Kiyoshi, what do you want to make? What's happening? This is Eric. What's your comment? Do you want to join to the discussion?
Hey, brother, what's up, man? You know, there's so many topics, you know, on the table right now.
Okay.
I think the biggest topic is to focus on a counter culture to what's happening now. Okay? And I'm not talking about an obvious one either. Hear me what I'm saying. Okay?
Yeah.
They know our tactics. They are currently using the tactics that we once used.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I'm playing third answer here and devil's advocate.
Yep.
So we have to create a counterculture within ourselves. I do not know the processes of how to get this going because dozens of others before us have tried to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but
I feel you on that.
Every single one of them were correct in their own manner. Maybe their methodology we can disagree upon, but
right.
The general idea, regardless of the methodology, was correct.
Right.
Until we
right.
can build that infrastructure of power within ourselves, what can we really do other than attempt to influence legislature?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the legislature
there's
only goes for so
we need to take. That's
yeah.
good. We,
legislature goes.
Like about,
right,
okay,
real quick.
Point,
legislature only
like
goes for so far.
Seconds, okay.
Okay, legislature only goes for so far. And it's not bad. It's not, you know, but it only goes so far.
Mm-hmm.
So, how do, you know, what methodology? This is something that we have to stop studying and find a way to make it happen. I do not, and I don't have the answer for this. I'm going to tell you plain, straight out. I do not have this
okay.
answer. I'm willing to participate
well, there it is. There
any
it is.
Way
Go
I can.
Back.
We need to get together, you.
Right.
We need to get
yeah,
together,
I
man.
I agree with you on that point. We got 2 minutes left. Let me go to this last final caller, too. Go ahead, caller, 973. Go ahead.
Yeah.
You wanted to say?
I'd like to say one thing. I hear an awful lot of talk. There's a lot that needs to be done in this in our community, and much of it has to be done by us black people. Unfortunately, too many people talk about it and not willing to step out there and get on the line. One of the things that we need to do is stop talking and become active, which includes, of course, electing the right people to a public office to represent us. And if, in fact, those people do not do that, that we have to remain organized to remove them from office. One of the things that we do not do and use to our utmost is the ability to elect people and to take people out of office. Too many people believe that my one vote won't count, and therefore they don't vote, and therefore their vote never means anything. There's a lot of things that we need to do, but one is that we have to stop talking and become active in an organization that may be out there, whether it be POP, whether it be NAACP. But we need to stop talking about it and take our ideas to these organizations and work together. Too many people talk and not do anything about it.
Okay. Got to put it right there. Thank you, caller. Appreciate that. I got 60 seconds. I'm going to sign off right now. That was my dad. As usual, thanks for calling in, Dad. We're making your point known. Also, want to say thank you to my brother, Kiyoshi, who my childhood friend. And you know his perspective because we grew up together, so we revolutionized. Thank you, Kiyoshi, for your input. I want to say thank you. Thank you to Brother Byron Saunders, as usual, our guest resident host, for his lively discussion. We'll probably be picking it up because I'm sure Trump will give us something more to talk about next. Thank you, Byron.
Peace and love, everyone. Peace and love.
All right.
Thanks, Wayne.
Thank you, Mr. Wayne Gilman. Our
thank
co-host,
you.
Legendary
always
newsman.
A pleasure. Always a pleasure.
All righty. Next week again. I am what's known as the Sun. We had a lively discussion tonight. This has been the Kay Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. You can listen to us live every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. We're also archived if you want to listen to us over and over again. I'm the Sun, Eric Payne. You are.
And I'm Kay Thompson. Listen to us every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. For more exciting programming.
Well, there it is, everybody. Get busy. Good night.